Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this. Hello, welcome to the Ghost of Harrenhal. My name is McKelly.
And I'm Jenny. That's right, everyone, I'm back.
That's right, Jenny is back. Thank you all for joining us for episode 211 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 67 of A Storm of Swords. That's Jamie 8.
As always, we'll chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you and hopefully provide you with some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondences.
Be sure to check out our show notes. They provided some additional information about the characters and other things of note in the chapter.
Jenny, welcome back. It's
Thanks.
Been a while.
It has been so long.
2 episodes? Is that right?
Yes. Well, 1, I think. Is it 1?
I think Simon and I did the last episode, and you did the one before that.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yes, it does.
Well, it's great to have you back. Of course, we're missing the third leg of our stable tripod here, so we'll just be stilts, I guess. We'll get by as wobbly as we go. So, how are things? How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
It's been a week.
Yes. You've had quite a week.
I've had a week. So I think I mentioned in the last episode that we were moving Ethan to Pennsylvania. And so that happened this past week. And it was like a constant state of fiasco. The whole thing, the whole move was just like one troubleshooting exercise after another. And like, so I think last episode I talked about how the moving truck didn't show up the day that we drove all the way to Charlotte.
Yes.
To meet the moving truck. It didn't show up for 2 days later. Well, we weren't surprised by this. He told us he was going to be there on Friday. He calls Friday morning and says he won't be there till Saturday. Saturday morning. He calls Saturday morning and says he won't be there till Saturday evening. So it was just, he just kept pushing us back.
Wow.
Which, you know, we were, at least we were there this time. It wasn't
True.
Like, you know, we had to drive 2.5 hours to meet him. We were there waiting for him. So that was all right. But it was just like nonstop issues. Like the, you know, we get there and the washer and dryer wasn't working. And the garage door opener wasn't working. And the furnace wasn't working. And it was just like all these troubleshooting things one after another. And to make matters worse, Saturday morning, just hours before the mover gets there, I'm walking down the stairs of the hotel room, of the hotel from my room to the free continental breakfast. And I pull my back out.
Oh, no.
because apparently, at least according to Sir Balon Swan, I am over 40 and therefore an old done man.
I was going to take issue with that statement.
I know. So I literally couldn't bend over to pick up a pencil. Like I had to have everybody do it. Like, Molly, could you pick that paper up off the ground? Molly, could you move that box over to there? So
yes.
It was very conveniently timed if I wanted to get out of doing any literal heavy lifting, but I felt like so useless.
You know, I've done that before though, and I think I'd rather do the lifting than have that ailment.
Oh yeah, it was miserable. We then had to drive like 9 hours back home. And I couldn't drive because I couldn't lean forward and turn my head to see traffic lanes, you know. So Stacy had to drive. So that part not so great. And leaving him was tough. As I believe you told me once, your children are like your heart walking around outside of your body.
Yes.
And so now half of my heart is walking around outside of my body 5 states away. And, you know,
yes, in another state.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but I'm not the first parent to ever have to deal with this. And so, you know.
But he got moved in, right? Everything's good now?
He is moved in. He's moved in, yeah. We've talked to him every night since he left. We kind of have to talk him into talking because he's usually busy trying to get his life set up. But we've talked to him three nights, I guess, and he's doing well. He's doing well.
How does Ethan feel about moving that far away? He's fine with it, or?
I think he was more concerned about making friends in a new city where he doesn't know anybody. Because when he moved to Charlotte, he spent several months not knowing hardly anybody in the city. And then by the time he decided to take this job in Pennsylvania, he had a great friend group, and he was really reluctant to just pick up and move again and leave the friend group that he finally established and was really fond of behind. So that was his biggest concern, I believe.
I see. So. You know, I can hear Simon now going, what a couple of sad sacks.
Yes. He's rolling his eyes, looking at his watch, going, they've already wasted 6 minutes chatting about this sappy stuff. I do have a funny story that happened that I just heard about at dinner, like a little over an hour ago. Stacy was interviewing someone at for where she works, you know, a new employee. Mm-hmm. And the employee was like, you know, my age-ish, you know, middle-age-ish male. And he was wearing a suit coat and a tie and a, you know, button-down shirt and everything. It was a virtual meeting. So it was like a Zoom meeting like you and I are doing here right now.
Yes.
But he took it on his phone. And he had his phone propped up on what she assumes was a coffee table because he took it on his sofa, which is kind of an odd place to take a job interview. But, yes. You know. But taking it on his phone, you know, like you get the big window is the people that are looking at you. And there's a littler window that is your own view looking back at you. Well, he must not have paid too much attention to that little view because the man wasn't wearing pants.
Oh, no. That's kind of similar to my story.
Yes. It made me think of your story. She said he had on boxer briefs, like checkered boxer briefs. Gosh.
She probably didn't even realize she could see.
Yes. I wonder if when they hung up the call, if like his screen came back into view and he realized, oh, no, they could see me from the... He probably thought he was just like, you know, chest high or whatever, but nope, he was full body there. And
wow.
She said at first she was like, is he wearing like beige pants? Like, you know, maybe like kind of skin-ish colored pants? And then she's like, no, I think I see leg hair there. I don't think those are pants.
That just makes the whole thing more awkward.
Yes. She said she and the other person that was on the interview on her side, afterward, they were talking about how hard it was to pay attention to his answers because they were so distracted by
it. I can imagine.
So I don't know if that person will be getting a second interview or not.
I can understand that. Speaking of hiring people, we are hiring where I work, somebody to help the customers and answer the phones. And I think my boss could write a book on what answers not to give.
Oh,
because
yes.
She's had some really good ones recently. And right before that, we hired a new delivery driver, and I don't know if they're not aware of what they're saying or they don't know how it sounds, but it's just, you're like, really? You said that in an interview. Interesting choice.
Did she give you any examples that you could share with us?
Well, when she was hiring a new delivery driver, one of the people that she had talked to had said, I'd love to be the delivery driver because I can go home several times a day and check on my dogs and feed them.
Oh, okay.
So I guess they were expecting to be able to visit their dog several times a day?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, you know, pop in, have a snack, watch a show,
mm-hmm.
and get back on the road.
Yeah, get back to it eventually.
Maybe not quite so much honesty next time.
Yeah, really. Maybe the interview. Save that for yourself.
Well, anyway, we have a pretty good episode lined up for everyone here. So I guess we should, as Simon would say, get down to business.
All right. Well, let's see. Where did we last see Jaime? He and Brienne were returning to King's Landing. They had heard of Joffrey's death, as well as the deaths of Kat and King Robb. Brienne was nearly catatonic over the news. Jaime was mostly focused on the effect of Joff's death on Cersei. His reunion with Cersei was a bit awkward, and their sex over their son's dead body was downright disturbing. Afterward, his reunion with his father ended in Tywin basically disowning him. McKellie, why don't we give them the summary?
All right, and full props to the author of this summary, which was you yet again.
And I think this is the fastest I've ever done a summary, so I was quite proud of myself.
Yeah, it's a good summary, too. And of course, you titled it, and you called it The White Room, which is a very fitting name.
Yes.
So, Jaime is awaiting the rest of the Kingsguard in the White Sword Tower while perusing the organization's history in the White Book. He feels like a stranger in his own house. As he reads the distinguished names that preceded him as Lord Commander, he also feels unworthy of the title. He notes the achievements of Ser Barristan Selmy and notices his own page is scant by comparison. Ser Barristan could have at least recorded a few more of Jaime's accomplishments.
Jaime considers the past and thinks the world was a simpler time, when men and swords were both made of finer steel. He wonders when the boy inside him died. When he donned his white cloak, or when he slew Mad King Aerys.
The rest of the Kingsguard arrives, and Jaime stands to receive them. Sir Osmond Kettleblack quips that if Jaime had been as washed, brushed, and shaven as he is now, surely he would have recognized him earlier. Jaime doesn't even recognize himself. As everyone is seated, Jaime performs the ritual of ascertaining who is guarding the king. Sir Aerys Okart is often Dorne, so there are six of them present. Jaime wonders how the Kingsguard has fallen so low.
Jaime berates them for letting Joffrey die and asks whether Tyrion had killed him. Ser Meryn and Ser Boros are convinced Tyrion is guilty, while Ser Balon notes that there were many people milling around and moving about the hall. Ser Osmond seems completely disinterested, and Ser Loras wants to blame Sansa.
Jaime assigns Ser Boros to taste Tommen's food and drink henceforth. When Ser Boros resists, Jaime insults him, causing Ser Boros to challenge him to a sword fight. Jaime bluffs his way through it, since Ser Boros could have easily bested him in his current state. Ser Boros leaves in disgust, and Jaime is glad about that.
He next ascertains that Ser Osmond is merely a sellsword, and even finds his knighthood is dubious. Jaime dismisses him and moves on to Ser Meryn. He berates the knight for beating Sansa on Joffrey's orders. He informs Ser Meryn that he will only obey Lord Tywin, Cersei, and Jaime in the future. Part of protecting the king is protecting him from himself. After Ser Meryn is dismissed, he focuses on Ser Balon. He notes that Ser Balon's brother fought for Renly, and Balon's father did not call his banners at all. Balon tries to excuse his father as an old man who is done with fighting while his brother was captured and pledged fealty to the crown. Jaime asks what Balon will do if his blood switches side again. Ser Balon assures Jaime he'll do his duty.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Lastly, Jaime is alone with Ser Loras. As they trade barbed banter, Jaime realizes Loras is just like him at that age. He asks who was wearing Renly's armor in the Battle of the Blackwater, and learns it was Loras' brother, Ser Garlan. But it was Littlefinger who suggested it. Jaime asks about Renly's remains, and Loras tells him he buried Renly himself in a secret place. Jaime brings the conversation to Brienne. Loras still thinks she's guilty, but entertains doubts. The gorget Renly was wearing was cut through, and no man could have done that. Loras further wonders why Brienne would armor Renly just to kill him. Jaime tells Loras to question Brienne. If Loras is still not convinced of her innocence, then Jaime will punish her for it. Jaime asks that Loras judge her fairly as a knight and accuse her or release her. Good job. Good stuff.
Thanks. All right, so Jamie's homecoming is not going so well.
No, it's really not. I'm sure all the nights that he dreamed in the dungeons of Riverrun of returning home, it probably none of them probably went like this.
I don't think they did. Yeah, so his brother's on trial for murdering his son. His father has disowned him, and Cersei is avoiding him.
Yeah, 0-3, basically.
Yes. Why do you think he hasn't gone to see Tyrion?
Yeah, you know, and that was something I think Simon and I discussed just this last Tyrion chapter, which I think was last chapter.
Yes.
And, I mean, we wondered what it was last time, and we get an answer sort of this time, but not really.
Not he really. Says, I mean, he says where he's been, but not why he's not going to see him.
Exactly. He said he's been hanging in the back of the throne room and that either Tyrion didn't see him or didn't recognize him. But why? Why is he not? So here's some options that I came up with when I was thinking about it. I'm actually kind of surprised we didn't get a reason in this chapter because he thinks about the fact that he's been at Tyrion's trial.
Yes.
But he doesn't think about the fact of why he hasn't gone to see Tyrion. I was a little bit kind of surprised by that. So my first thought was possibly he's trying to stay neutral since this fight is between family. But he's gone to see Cersei, so already the neutrality is out the window there.
Agreed.
Possibly because it was his son that was killed, and out of respect for Cersei, he's staying away from Tyrion.
Do you think he was trying to see if Tyrion was guilty before he went to see him?
Maybe. That could be, yeah. Because if he is guilty, then Tyrion knows that Joffrey is Jaime's son, and so Tyrion is aware that he killed Jaime's son.
Yes.
Not just their nephew. So that might be a reason why you wouldn't go see your brother if he killed your son.
Yes. But we have seen Jaime say that even though Joffrey is biologically his son, he didn't really feel any connection to him.
Right. He thinks that again at the end of this chapter.
Yes.
And then the last thing I came up with was maybe he's like the one rule follower all of a sudden in the Red Keep, and he's respecting the rule that nobody speaks to the prisoner.
Maybe.
That Oberyn Martell violated at the end of last chapter. So, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see if that information is revealed, but it's kind of curious that we haven't been told in this chapter. But, you know, there's another question regarding Jaime and his relationship with his siblings, and that is he thinks to himself, so therefore tells us, that Cersei's been keeping him at a distance and not allowing them to be alone together.
Yes.
Why is that?
I was going to ask the same question. Do you think it's because of what happened in the throne room the last time they were alone together?
I think so. Yeah, first of all, in a vacuum, it would be very odd because she pined for him so much for him while he was gone. You know, yes. She missed him so much and wanted him home so badly that it's odd that she is being so cold and distant to him. I do think there's a very strong possibility that it's at the very least the conversation that they had in the Sept about revealing their relationship and marrying each other, and Cersei was very much not okay with that idea, and maybe she's staying away from him because she's afraid he's going to bring that kind of stuff up again.
Yeah, she's avoiding the conversation again. That could be.
The other thought I had was possibly she's been busy wooing Oberyn Martell, and it's hard to do that with your twin brother / lover by your side.
That's true. Good point.
So those are the two the two ideas I came up with. Once again, we don't know why. And this one makes sense because he doesn't know why she's keeping him at bay. So it makes sense that we wouldn't get yes. that information.
Right.
Less so with Tyrion. But we do get to meet the White Book, which is a really cool old book. And
it is a cool book. Well, you know, I just thought the whole room sounded cool with all the white, you know.
Yes.
Like, literally everything is white. And then the book is a lot of name dropping. It's like, who's who? Westeros.
Yeah, and you know, as I was reading it, I was like, oh, wow, there's going to be a lot of really great background opportunities in this chapter. I was wrong. And you'll hear in background, I'll go more into being so wrong about that. But yeah, I love the idea of the White Book. Personally, I would love to read it. I think it would be fun if someday, when George has finished A Song of Ice and Fire, of course, if he created a White Book for us to read, that would be a pretty neat thing.
I would absolutely buy that. I'm a sucker for that sort of thing.
Yeah, me too. And it could be like a huge White Book, just yes. like it is, you know?
Yes.
That would be really neat.
I would make room for that.
Yeah, absolutely. People would eat that up, I think. And one thing I'll say about the writing of the White Book is that I appreciate that it's written in facts only. There's no editorializing, no opinions yes. given. There are things like, during the sack of King's Landing, Jaime slew King Aerys at the foot of the Iron Throne. There's no, like, slew the king he vowed to protect, or, you know.
Yes, it's not an editorial, it's just the facts.
Yes, and as a journalism major, or a person with a degree in journalism, I respect that it's just the facts, which is very hard to come across these days. I appreciate at least Barristan. I'm not sure, we didn't get to read everybody's, but Barristan and Jaime's were both written very facts only.
Yes. I wonder how it would look from maybe like the Sword of the Morning or something. Like, what would he have written?
Yeah, yeah. Someone maybe with a little more emotion, maybe like a Martell, like Lewin Martell.
Yes.
You know?
That would be really cool to read.
It's so Barristan that he wrote his own dismissal before leaving.
It is very Barristan. he's really a stickler for the letter of the law.
Yes. And I always loved that little detail that he did that. It's little things like this that make this story so engaging.
Yes. You know, little details. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And just like Jaime, we knew Barristan well enough to be amused but not surprised by the fact that he did it. Like, oh yeah, that's a Barristan move right there.
Yes.
You know? So... yeah, I like the book. Very cool.
I also thought, I had forgotten that the table was a white weirwood table with three white Mustangs holding it up.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was cool as well. I mean, I don't really approve of people cutting down weirwoods, but since it's already been done, I'm sure right. it's very visually appealing.
Yeah, I bet it's beautiful.
I had forgotten that it looked like that, because it may, you know, everybody always thinks of the table that Stannis has, but I had forgotten that that one looks pretty cool also.
Right, the painted table versus the white table.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't recall whether there were any scenes shot in the White Sword Tower in the Game of Thrones TV show.
I haven't watched the TV show for several years, so I can't remember either.
Neither have I. That's Simon's job. Right. And I have to correct him when he gets the two confused, which is why I can't watch the TV show anymore.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
Something else that I had forgotten, or maybe the TV show did influence me, was Balon Swan's age. I think most of the Kingsguard in the show were older than they would be here, you know, in the book.
Oh, right, right.
Because I was thinking Balon Swan was, you know, at least the same age as Jaime, if not a little older. And when he says his father is an old man, you know, past 40, I was thinking, well, right. He can only be in his 20s then, probably.
Yes. Old done man in his 40s.
Kind of surprised me there. I was thinking maybe because of the show that he wasn't that old. Either he was way older.
I agree. In my mind, I had not thought of him as being that young either. But yeah, I mean, also, Balon is the second son. Donal is the heir. He yes. is the older son. Yeah. So he could be in his late teens, early 20s.
He could be.
Very much. Very much. Yeah. Well, so speaking of his brothers, all of Jaime's, well, five of Jaime's six sworn brothers arrive. Aerys Okart is missing. He's off in Dorne with Marcella. And kind of the first order of business they get into is a discussion on Tyrion's guilt or innocence.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of noticed that their opinions fit their characters.
Yes, they do.
Did you notice that?
Very much, yes. Yeah. Yeah, Trant and Meryn Trant and Boris Blunt are both like, yeah, he did it.
Yeah,
you know, without any reservation, yeah, he did it. And then, of course, so Osmond Kettleblack jokes that it was the High Septon, and he was joking, right?
I think he was joking. Yeah,
I do too.
He seemed pretty flippant about it, so
yeah. And that was a little bit weird.
Yeah, because that's Jaime's nephew at the least, you know?
Exactly,
I mean, even
yes.
if you don't know the full story, it's his nephew.
Exactly. So I thought it odd that he would make a joke about his nephew's death, you know, right there in front of him
yes.
when this trial that his brother is involved in is going on. But, you know, Osmond Kettleblack's an odd duck.
And he is.
Very mysterious odd duck. So
I think all of the Kettleblacks are, but...
Yes. We've really only gotten to meet Osmond. We know of Osfrid and Osni, but we haven't really got to meet them all that much yet. Mm-hmm. But if they're anything like Osmond, they're just mysterious. And we'll get into that when Jaime talks to Osmond about why he doesn't have a clue who Osmond is.
Loras thinks that Sansa did it, which kind of ties in with maybe he's still thinking about Brienne, you know? Maybe that has influence on his answer?
Yeah. I thought his answer kind of odd, because his reasoning is Sansa was the only one who wanted both the king and queen dead, which suggests that Sansa is bitter about being put aside and would want revenge on the couple, and I could see many people feeling this way. Like, for instance, Tanda Stokeworth said pretty much as much when they were fleeing after the, you know, after the feast.
Yes.
When Sansa and Tanda were fleeing together, how she was a good girl because she was crying for the death of a man who tossed her aside. I will say Sansa's disappearance is only exacerbating the issue.
Agreed. But I think that maybe part of the reason why he thinks it might have been her and why she wanted the queen dead as well is because they were both drinking from that goblet, which I guess he was thinking it could have gotten Margaery as well.
Yes, yes.
Like, because they... I don't think, you know, that Loras knows anything.
Yeah, that was what I was wondering. Does Margaery think like Loras? Does Margaery think, I wonder if Sansa Stark just tried to kill me? Because Sansa told Margaery all the awful things about Joff and outright begged her not to marry Joff, even though it would not be beneficial for Sansa on a lot of levels. She still said, don't do it, don't marry him. And so multiple wonders that I have here. Is Margaery thinking along the same lines as Loras? Are Margaery and Loras talking? Did Margaery say to Loras, Sansa doesn't want me to marry Joff because he's done all these horrible things to her? It certainly seems like they must not be having these kind of discussions.
You know, that's a good question. I don't think we ever really find out what Margaery thought as far as was Sansa trying to kill her, do we? Margaery's pretty smart, and I think she can tell that Sansa was still a little bit naive, maybe, so I don't know that she would blame her for something like that.
Yes, I find it hard to believe that Margaery would think that Sansa was trying to kill her after twice, once at that breakfast and once when they were out together, just the two of them, saying, Joffrey's a monster, don't marry him.
Yes.
Seems like you wouldn't then
try
and have her killed.
Yes.
So, and I also, you know, Margaery was not called to testify. Basically, the whole rest of King's Landing was called to testify. Margaery, the queen herself, wasn't called to testify. So could that be because Cersei feels like Margaery doesn't think it was Tyrion and Sansa? Maybe she has said as much and Cersei doesn't want that out there?
Yeah, that might be it.
So anyway, I just found it odd that Loras thinks Sansa did it when Loras is the closest person to Margaery who I think wouldn't think Sansa did it.
Right. Baelon, I think, made the best sense. Like, he was the most open-minded about it. Maybe he was just trying to be cautious because it is Jaime's family, but it doesn't seem like it. I think that he really wasn't sure. You know, he said that there were a lot of people there, you know, moving around, milling about and everything. So could have been anybody, really.
Yeah, and everybody was watching the doves.
Yes.
You know, everybody was distracted by the doves and yeah, it could have.
Only have taken a second to drop something in there, so.
Right. And Baelon testified first in the trial and he said, I don't think Tyrion did it. And Tyrion was like, why would Cersei put him up there if he doesn't think I did it?
Right.
So, I think he doesn't think Tyrion did it.
Yeah, I don't think he thinks so either.
It would be weird for him to think he did it and get up and testify and say, I don't think he did it. So,
yes, definitely.
Then things get a little bit uncomfortable for everyone at the table.
Yeah, man, I would not want to have been at that table.
Yeah. So Jaime talks to each brother one at a time. And some of the conversations are more brutal than others. But like I said, all of them are on their uncomfortable side.
Right.
And he first goes, focuses in on Sir Boris Blunt, and he clearly has a dislike for Boris. He assigns Boris as Tommen's new taste tester, which
you
very
know,
much
I
rankles.
Think he did Boris Blunt first because he knew what he was going to say, and he wanted it to be in front of everyone else.
Oh, yes. That could be. Yeah, that
I think he
sense.
Was trying to humiliate him because he thinks he's a coward. He thinks in his head, that Boris is a coward.
Yeah, well, he certainly didn't live up to his vows when he let Tommen be taken so easily by Tyrion. I think it was Jessel and Bywater and men that he sent
yes.
out to get Tommen. And Boris just rolled over and let them take Tommen. But you know, about that, Jaime thinks that Cersei was wrong to strip Boris of his cloak. And I thought that was surprising.
Well, I think it just looks bad on the entire organization. Don't you think?
Yeah.
To do that?
You're right. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. The act itself of just letting the heir be taken without a fight is certainly grounds for dismissal, but you're right. From a public relations standpoint, it's not a good look.
Yeah, because this is a second time they've taken the cape from somebody.
Yes.
And it's supposed to be for life, but then they yes. gave it back. So it just seems a little
wishy-washy.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And then, and of course, unsurprisingly, Blunt takes offense to being named Tommen's new taste tester and kind of challenges Jaime. And rather than back down, because Jaime only has his left hand, which he can't do anything with, Jaime kind of blusters and challenges back to Blunt. And it was Blunt who ultimately backed down. And thankfully for Jaime, because he knew there was nothing he could do if Blunt
Can you imagine
called him on that?
That fight right there in front of the other Kingsguard if
oh,
Blunt had been
be
like, let's go, you know?
Yeah.
That would not have been pretty.
Yes, it would not have been. Oh, goodness. Jaime would have been like, well, you see, the thing is this. We got work to do. We'll schedule this for later.
Right. Meet me outside in 3 days.
Yeah, that's right. But it seems like it's only a matter of time before his inability to wield a sword is exposed.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, he's in the King's Guard. He's going to have to be able to fight.
Right. And when they're training in the yard, is he going to just continue to say, I'll be there next time. I'll catch up. You guys go on ahead.
Right.
So we'll have to see how that plays out. But then the... where are we?
I think Osmond.
Yeah. So then he dismisses Boris Blunt, and he turns his attention to Osmond Kettleblack, and he, and I agree with Jaime, finds it very odd that even though Jaime has traveled all over the realm for various reasons, he has never heard of Sir Osmond Kettleblack before.
Yes, it is very odd. Do you think that Osmond was really knighted by this mysterious Robert Stone? That's a very convenient name. Yes, very convenient.
A convenient name, and he is conveniently dead.
Yes.
So, the whole backstory is a little shaky, really.
Says,
yeah, he says that he served here and there, and then when pressed, he says, I fought in the Stepstones and in the Disputed Lands. And the Stepstones and the Disputed Lands, for anyone who's trying to recall what those things are, the Stepstones are a small island group kind of east of Dorne in the Narrow Sea, and then the Disputed Lands are the southeast portion of Essos that are frequently fought over by the cities of Lys, Myr, and Tyrosh. The Stepstones are kind of in the sea west of the Disputed Lands. They used to, theoretically, as far as legend goes, they used to be part of the Arm of Dorne that connected Essos to Westeros. So that's the area that he's talking about. Yeah, I mean, picking like this far off area that...
Yeah, because you can't really check on that. You know?
Right.
Let me send them a raven and see if, you know, they can give you some credit here, but...
Yeah, it's a little shaky there. But, and he says he fought for the gallant men. And I tried to look them up, and this is the first and only time that that company is ever referenced. So who knows if they ever even existed.
Yes.
So I'm with Jaime. I find it odd, too.
I find it highly suspect. All right, so Trant finally gets some reproach over the treatment of Sansa, but I don't know. I mean, I'm glad Jaime did, you know, bring up the subject and say something to him. I would have preferred a little bit stronger reproach, personally.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But at least he tried to do something.
Yeah, so... He turns the white book on Meryn Trant and says, show me in here where our vows say to beat women and children. And like you said, I'm glad someone is hauling Trant up. I wish it were significantly harsher than just a shaking of the fist or wagging of the finger that wasn't nice. But I do find it ironic that it's Jaime, of all people, that... that hauls him up on the beating of women and children. The same guy who pushed Bran out a window.
That is true, and you know how I feel about that, about Jaime pushing Bran out the window. But yes. I do have to bring up the fact that Jaime was the one who stood outside of King Aerys' door and listened to him beat Queen Rhaella.
Yes, he did.
He did have some sympathy there for both of those people.
Right. Yes, very true. And he brings up a good point. He tells Meryn, he says, protecting the king includes protecting the king from himself. And boy, I wish there was an adult with authority around to make such common sense rules before Jaime got there, while these things were happening to Sansa.
Yes. Can you imagine if Tywin had been there earlier?
Yeah, I don't think these kind of things would have happened to Sansa.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
First of all, just generally, the fear that they might accidentally kill Sansa. And then the Starks might seek retribution by killing Jaime. That just alone probably would have prevented Tywin from allowing this to happen.
Yes.
Tyrion did try, but unfortunately, he gets no respect from Joffrey or Cersei. So he was not very effective in curbing the behavior. And Cersei clearly either had no ability to control Joff or no desire to control Joff in any shape or form, but let alone the Sansa situation.
Yeah, I think that even if, well, I mean, Cersei pretty much gave him free rein, but he didn't seem to listen to Tyrion when Tyrion was telling him to stop doing these things either. So I think Tywin would have been scarier to Joffrey.
Yes. And a much stronger presence.
Yes.
And then so then he, Jaime sends Meryn Trant on his way. And he acknowledges Baelon Swan as an honorable, valiant, positive addition to the Royal Kingsguard, which I agree with.
I do too.
His concern, Jaime's concern, is that Swan's family, specifically his older brother Donal and his father Julian, they would not have been in solidarity with the crown until they were forced to do so. He has kind of a funny line Jaime does when at the end of his discussion with Baelon, when he says that Donal should put a weather vane on his sigil.
I also thought it was kind of funny but awkward for Sir Baelon when Jaime said that he was faced with this choice, and Sir Baelon said, "I promise I won't do what you did."
Yes. That was a good line. I liked that line.
It's another one of those things that makes this, you know, fun reading these books.
Yes. You know, I agree that Baelon Swan is a good addition to the Royal Kingsguard.
Yes.
First of all, he seems a very handy fighter. He finished top third in the archery contest at the Hands Tourney with Angai and Jalabar Zo.
Yes.
So he's clearly good with a bow and a sword. He seems like, as Jaime says, an honorable, valiant man. I do a little bit question his judgment in accepting this role for this king and this family.
Well,
it's kind of a shame that someone so honorable is being was tasked with guarding such a terrible king.
It is terrible, but it's still a good appointment for a second son.
True. That's true. He is a second son. Yes. It's just a shame that he got this particular king in this particular family.
Most definitely.
Although, the state, Jaime thinks about the state of the Kingsguard and how it's fallen off so far.
Yes.
Compared to when he, you know, he swore his oath. And when he swore his oath, it was to an equally terrible king. So
that is true.
And it wasn't just Jaime. There were some, you know, these are all Jaime's thoughts, but he highly respected his previous brothers under King Aerys.
I think there were a lot of good Kingsguard serving Aerys.
Yes, yes. There seems to have been a huge drop-off from Aerys Kingsguard to Robert's Kingsguard and then Joffrey's Kingsguard. Although we were, as we were told, several of Aerys Kingsguard defended Lyanna from her own brother after Rhaegar, as the story goes, kidnapped and then repeatedly raped Lyanna. So, you know, they're doing their duty. But that's not the most honorable action to take. But there was, you know, when you look at the Kingsguard, there was basically a wholesale change between Aerys' reign and Robert's reign, because five of the seven died before the Robert's Rebellion was over. Only Barristan, Selmy, and Jaime lived. They lost Sir Gerald Hightower, the Lord Commander. They lost Lewin Martell, Oswald Went, Arthur Dayne, Jonathor Derry. I think that's the five that died.
Yeah, I think so.
And those are all very highly respected names around Westeros.
Very good fighters.
Yes. And they were replaced with Boris Blunt, Meryn Trant, Mandon Moore, Preston Greenfield, and Aerys Okart. And we've seen Blunt and Trant be pretty dishonorable knights. And Mandon Moore tried to kill Tyrion. So, you know, not exactly the greatest of
the
hires
best
there.
Kingsguard, yes.
No. So, and then for Joffrey, the Hound, which we all have complicated feelings about the Hound. Osmond Kettleblack and then Sir Loras. So, you know, Sir Loras seems like he's going to be a good hire, but Osmond Kettleblack, they're both too new to know for sure. And Hound wasn't really around long enough to see how he
In Sir it. Osmond's defense, one thing that I did read in a previous chapter that I thought was honorable was when she was supposed to go to her wedding and they sent Osmond Kettleblack and Meryn Trant up to get her. Meryn Trant was ready to use violence, and Osmond Kettleblack talked her into it with just words and told her to come along nicely. So,
right,
saved her from a beating.
Yes, good point. Good memory on that. But that, then the remainder of the chapter is basically his conversation with Sir Loras. And it starts out pretty contentious.
It does. It does. I think Loras is pretty arrogant here. But then Jaime is too sometimes still. And he definitely was in his youth, so.
Yes, he very much feels like he's talking to a younger version of himself.
I think that Loras was arrogant until Renly was brought up, and then he seemed to change completely.
Yes, and I think Jaime notices that he's lost his bravado since the conversation turned to Jaime. You know, Jaime kind of disparages the current Kingsguard in that, you know, he, Jaime, studied under all these great knights, the Gerald Hightowers and Barristan Selmys and Oswald Wentz. And, you know, poor Renly is stuck, or Loras is stuck here with the Meryn Trants and the Boris Blunts. But yet, Jaime was still a kind of a terrible person up until his interaction and journey with Brienne.
Yes.
He was still just as cocky and arrogant as young 17-year-old Loras is here, so.
Which wasn't that long ago.
Right. Yeah, that was just a couple months, maybe, right? I'm not exactly sure how long they were on the road, but he was a terrible person in the first couple Jaime chapters of this book when we finally got inside of his head.
Yes, I don't want to like Jaime most of the time. But yeah, he does some things that makes you question whether you should like him or not. I don't know. It's one of those.
I agree. Yes, it's hard because sometimes when you're in his head, you're like, you know, this guy's not so bad. But then when you think of all the things he's done previously, it's a different story. So yeah, it's complicated.
Very complicated.
When it comes to Jaime. I was thinking maybe Loras should study under Brienne.
You know, even if Loras can get to the point where he doesn't think that Brienne committed Renly's murder, I don't know that he would be open to that.
No, I don't think so. Probably not. But it might mature him some, like it seems to have. I don't think Jaime would have nearly be as humble and introspective as he seems to be today if it hadn't have been for the trials and tribulations they had gone through. You know, if he and Brienne and Sir Cleos had just taken the boat down the Red Fork and made it to King's Landing without problem, I don't think we would have seen much of a difference. I think it was all the issues they ran into and had to sort out, the two of them, that caused most of the change within Jaime.
Yes.
Oh, and we find out who Renly's ghost was. It was Sir Garlan, Loras' older brother, and I think we might have spoiled that reveal a little while ago. And in my defense, I'm pretty sure Simon is the one that brought it up. So I just figured if he knew, it must have already been told in the story. So I just ran with it. And I was thinking, do we know this yet? But he knew it. And I thought, okay, well, if Simon knows it, then we must have been told.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate because you know Simon's memory. So
yes, that's why I thought.
If he already knew it, you must have covered it recently.
Yes, but I think this might have been when the reveal actually happened.
It could have been. I don't know. I did notice that Loras was a little bit sullen about his brother getting to wear the armor because it didn't fit him correctly. It didn't fit Loras correctly. So I think he was a little bit salty about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it is what it is. The armor, if he had been wearing it, the helmet might have spun around sideways or something, and that would have been dangerous. So I guess it was for the best. Plus, then it proved that it wasn't Loras. If Loras was missing and Renly's ghost was out there, people might have thought, oh, it was just Loras.
Right, that's
But Loras was out there, so...
Probably not as many people have heard of his brother.
Right, exactly.
All right, so Loras is talking with Jaime about Brienne, or maybe vice versa. Jaime's talking with Loras about Brienne. And Loras brings up that trick that she, what he considers a trick that she played during the fight that won her her rainbow cloak.
Yeah, I went back and reread that scene in Cat 2 of A Clash of Kings, and... So a man says after the fight that that she tricked him, and that the trick was that she pulled Loras off his horse. But the fight seemed pretty fair to me. They came together both on horseback and clashed, and they fought with Brienne had a Morning Star and Loras had a long axe, and they both ended up losing their weapons, and they grappled until they fell off their horses. And Loras in the chapter claims that she leapt. But I don't know. To me, it felt like a pretty fair fight.
I think so as well. I think that he's just still mad about it, and he considers it a trick.
He's grasping at straws there.
Yes. I don't think that she played a trick there, but bringing up tricks, you know, he should remember, as Jaime mentions here to him, that he remembers when Loras played a trick on Gregor Clegane in the tourney.
Yes. Yes, and that was very much a trick. That was a deliberate, that was a premeditated trick right there to ride a mare in heat when Gregor Clegane is riding a male horse that is aware that Loras's horse is in heat. So, yeah, that was definitely a trick. Brienne's, not so much.
Not so much, no. I think surprising someone... during a melee is not a trick. It's just you got the advantage.
Right. Yeah. Anyway. But Loras is, at the beginning of the conversation, Loras is convinced Brienne killed Renly because nobody else was in the tent but Brienne and Kat, which is a pretty reasonable assumption to make. There's nobody else in there and the king is dead. But I wondered, you know, as we were just talking about the trick and the melee at Bitterbridge. I wonder how much of his anger toward her stems from, one, his disapproval of her as a rainbow guard, because he brings that up in this chapter, that he thought it was ridiculous, a woman being in the rainbow guard, and two, his still hurt feelings over losing that melee.
I think so. I mean, yeah, it is a little hard to accept that it could have been a shadow.
Yes.
But then, you know, there are facts there that, like, Jaime brings up. Why would Brienne arm Renly and then kill him? If she was going to kill him, why didn't she just do it when he was not armed?
Right. Yes. And as the doubt begins to creep in, Loras starts to feel guilty for killing Robar Royce and M&K. And, you know... just because this was a while ago. So Emin was the one that fought Brienne when he entered the tent and saw that Renly was dead. Kat convinced Robar of their innocence, and Robar let them escape. And then Loras, in a fit of rage, killed Emin and Robar. He also mentions Parman Crane, and Parman Crane left his station at the tent when Robar and Kat arrived at Renly's tent. So he was not there for the death. He went over to Stannis after Renly's death. And the last we had heard of him, he was sent to Bitterbridge to collect the rest of Renly's foot soldiers. Because remember, Renly rode ahead to Storm's End with just his mounted force.
Yes.
He has not been heard of since. But in a Storm of Swords appendix, it says that Parman was imprisoned in Highgarden. When he arrived at Bitterbridge, he was arrested by Sir Loras and then hauled off to Highgarden to sit in a prison cell. So He might be feeling some guilt about that as well. At least that's one he can undo.
Well, I was going to say, I think he should feel a little bit guilty about killing the other two, because at the very least, they should have been arrested and also sent to prison to sort out later. He just blindly murdered them without, you know, knowing anything else.
Right. He just assumes, he says, I assumed they were all in on it because nobody did anything to defend the king. So he never bothered to find out whether anybody was in on it at all.
Yes.
But so, you know, as the conversation goes on, Jamie puts up a pretty good defense for Brienne. I think he makes a good case for her telling the truth about the shadow. It was a respectable effort by Jamie. And it was possible. I think at the end of the chapter, I think Loras is at least starting to change his mind. And boy, I sure hope so with what Jamie decides here in a minute. But, Jamie gives his impression and experience with spending so much time with Brienne and, you know, tells Loras about how seriously she takes honor and her vows. And then that causes Loras to realize he has his own story to back up Jamie's assertion about how seriously she takes these things, because he says, you know, I asked Renly, why do you keep Brienne around? And Renly said, because everybody else wants something from me, but all Brienne wants is to die for me. And, you know, so she didn't want anything from him. She just wanted to serve him. And, you know, that just speaks to her honor and her commitment to her vows.
I do think Jamie was a really good defense attorney here.
Yes, he was.
Yes. That's, you know, another mark on the good side of Jamie.
Yes. There's marks going every direction here with Jamie.
Yes. I do want to say, though, I was a little bit disappointed when I read that the first time to find out when Loras says that Renly found Brienne absurd, because he was supposed to be the nice one.
Right.
And Brienne thought so highly of him.
Yes.
And for him to
totally
think that way about her, it was just disappointing for me.
Yes. She loved him so much.
Yes. And
yeah, that was a little hard to hear how he truly felt about her.
Yes.
But Jamie kind of is a bit of a risky move. He leaves Brienne's fate in Loras' hands. He says, you go talk to Brienne. If she can convince you that the shadow did it and not her, or at least not beyond a shadow of a doubt that she did it.
Do you think that by punish her, he meant he would kill her himself?
I hope not. But, I mean, what else is the punishment?
You know, it's kind of unfair with no women at the wall. There's no other option, really. What do they do with, you know, the men? They're like, you can take the black, or you can lose a tongue or a hand or your life. But women, what do they do with that?
Silent sisters, maybe?
Well, that's true, but that's worse than being at the wall.
Brienne, on one hand, would make a decent silent sister because she doesn't talk a lot. She just doesn't.
And she's very good at doing her duty and that sort of thing. But
yes,
I still think she would be miserable there.
Agreed. Agreed. But Jamie must feel like he swayed Loras enough for him to make the right decision. Or he thinks Brienne is that her earnest nature will be enough to finish off seeding doubt in Loras' mind. I don't think that Jamie would have sent him up there if he didn't think it was about a 50-50 chance how this was going to go.
Yeah. I do think he wants to save Brienne, so yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so in this chapter, of course, we're inside Jamie's head. I just noticed how he's out of place with every facet of his life. His clothes don't fit right,
and
he notes that. You know, he's missing his hand, of course. He feels like he's out of place as Lord Commander of the King's Guard. He doesn't feel at home here, and, you know, his family's either disowned him or avoiding him or
on trial for murder.
On trial for his murder. So, yeah, he's just, what's he going to do next? Where will he go from here? You know, will he become more at home with himself and where he is? Or
yeah, you know, when I think when you've been out on such a trying time that he and Brienne had, it might be hard to come home and adjust to normalcy. And unfortunately for him, he can't even come home to adjust to normalcy because there isn't normalcy going on right now in his home. Maybe he could go back to Casterly Rock, but he's Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. So he can't even do that. He can't even get away for a bit, you know? So, yeah, it's a tough one. And he ends the chapter by thinking he has other debts to settle. What debts do you think?
Okay, so I have some thoughts on that, sure. But they're spoilers. Oh, so
okay.
I can't just throw them in here for everybody. Right. So,
well, you know, some of the ones, you know, like Vargo Hoat, certainly he'd want to pay debt to him, but he's either dead or mutilated at this point.
He's either dead. Yes, exactly.
Maybe he'd want retribution on Robb Stark, but again, already dead.
He's already dead. Yes. So that's why I was thinking the ones that I'm thinking of that are spoilers is the ones he's talking about. I know they're spoilers because I read the next chapter.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I guess I don't think it's too far off, is it, the next Jaime chapter?
It's a little ways off. It is a little ways off.
Well, everybody can just hold on till we get there.
I do think that Jaime is taking the Kingsguard more seriously.
Than he was before.
At this point. Yeah, than he was before.
Yes. Yes. You know, a new role. Now he's got authority and he's in middle management, so he's got more skin in the game here. So yeah, I could see that. And he's seeing what a mess the Kingsguard is right now and probably thinks this is embarrassing and it's my job to fix this.
I know he is in charge of it now and that puts you in a new place mentally, but like before he just didn't seem to care as much.
Agreed. I don't think he cared about much previously.
That, yeah, true.
Aside from Cersei. Yeah, exactly.
That's about it.
All right, so shall we move on to background?
We shall.
Well, I had said earlier that I thought this chapter was going to just be a goldmine of background opportunities. You know, we've got the whole Barristan Selmy entry, which is just littered with name dropping and event dropping, and then Jaime goes through all these former Kingsguard members, and I thought, oh wow, okay, which one am I going to choose? Well, as I started looking them up, I unfortunately discovered most of them were just dead ends, and it was the names and events given were just done so to add richness to the story, or the character events that were mentioned, we've already discussed, or they have upcoming plot points that I don't want to spoil. So, what I did was, I thought we'd talk about Balon Swan and his family, since the Swan family gets a decent amount of focus here in this chapter. And I figured I'd remind us all about some of their details, some of the stuff we've already talked about before, but it's been a very long time. So Jaime is skeptical of Balon's loyalty to Tommen, since Balon's brother and father didn't originally support Joffrey, which is reasonable of him to wonder, of course, especially knowing Jaime's history. But also, the Swans are from Stonehelm in the Stormlands, so one might wonder if Stannis were to make a resurgence, would the Swans return their fealty back to Stannis?
That's a reasonable question.
Yeah. However, we've also been told that the Swans, although a very old, proud, and powerful house, have a reputation of being cautious. So that might have explained why Julian Swan stayed out of this messy war, especially at the beginning when basically everyone that was announcing as a king, he had some sort of fealty to. At least Stannis, Renly, and Joffrey were all Baratheons. He swore fealty to all three of them. So complicated.
Yes.
So it might be why he was cautious, or else, you know, he's over 40. I mean, he's an old done man. That could have been it as well. One point worth mentioning is that Stonehelm is located on Cape Wrath, which is on the edge of the Rainwood Forest. Why is this a noteworthy detail? Well, because technically, according to Stannis anyway, Davos was given the title of Lord of Rainwood, so possibly the Swans might owe some kinda sorta fealty to Davos in Stannis' world anyway. And of course that is if Davos' bedtime story saved his neck from Stannis' wrath at the end of the last Davos chapter. If it didn't, then none of that matters anyway.
Do you think that Julian only swore fealty because they had his son?
Oh, yes, that's a very strong possibility. They have both his sons right now, too.
That's true. Yes, they did have the other one as well. At least he was already sworn to their service, though. The older one was not.
Right. Yes, that would certainly cause him to put his foot in some circle. And it would definitely be the one that has your two sons.
Okay, so comparison with the TV show, none of this happens. The book and the show diverge quite a bit here. Loras is not in the Kingsguard at all, so none of that with Loras happened. The Kettleblacks are not in the show. They're dropped entirely. Brienne was never imprisoned, and Jaime was present when Joffrey was killed, so he can't blame any of the rest of the Kingsguard.
Yes, that would be quite hypocritical.
Yes, he should point the finger at himself then.
Yes, and thank you to Simon for doing the work on pulling together that information. I asked him to do that before he left because he's the only one watching the show.
Yes. I could tell that Simon was responsible for that part.
Pedantry Corner, I don't have anything. How about you?
I do not.
We're missing our pedantic king here.
We are.
I'm sure Simon would have had something to bring up. So what? Maybe we'll ask him next episode to bring up pedantry for this current episode.
Or we could just let it go.
Yeah, we'll probably just do that. We'll just move on to news and notes. So there is an update to George Martin and other famous authors such as John Grisham and John Franzen. Their lawsuit filed against OpenAI, the parent company of ChatGPT. We talked about this last episode, I believe. The A Song of Ice and Fire fan named in the lawsuit, who used ChatGPT to generate Winds of Winter and A Dream of Spring copy. Actually, I think it was the episode that you were with us, right, that this came
yes.
up? Because you said you were just going to wait. You weren't
yes.
interested
yes.
in reading these AI-generated books. Well, anyway, too late. He's taken them down. And the fan actually put out a statement that said, "I am just now learning that I was mentioned in a legal document pertaining to the OpenAI lawsuit. I have removed the project from GitHub. Should any of George Martin's representatives wish to reach out, my contact info remains available."
I think that was a wise decision. And
I agree.
I think that was probably a pretty good response. At least he didn't remove all of his contact information and try to hide, you know.
Right. Yes. He's not trying to hide. He's putting himself out there saying, "Sorry, I didn't realize this was going to be such a big deal. I'll take it down."
Right.
And just as a reminder, the authors are suing OpenAI for copyright infringement over ChatGPT consuming their works without proper authorization or payment.
It makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's hard to prove that ChatGPT didn't consume those works when it could write two books based on the information
yes.
in the previous books. So,
okay, so according to a report from Variety, House of the Dragon Season 2 has wrapped up production, and the show continued to film through two strikes. So it survived because the scripts were already written. They were banked when the strike began. And it got through the SAG strikes because the filming was done in Europe, which has a different rules than the U.S. does. So, okay, so HBO is still planning for a summer 2024 release schedule for House of the Dragon Season 2.
Let's hope it sticks to that, because it's been a very long time. People are going to start to forget. What was this House of the Dragon show again?
Yes. I hope they don't wait any longer, because people will lose interest.
Yes. And we got a review. Would you like to read a review?
I will read the review. So it's from BaseballTX. He posted it on Apple Podcasts. And he labeled it the best A Song of Ice and Fire podcast out there. So BaseballTX, thanks for that. I'm sure that we all agree.
I like to hear that.
So he says, or this person, not necessarily he, but whether you listen as a companion to the books or just as a way to work through the books, these guys really know their stuff. Working through the books chapter by chapter, their chemistry and personalities really make it an interesting and entertaining listen. You get to know them on a personal level and enjoy their attention to detail and hard work that they put in doing this podcast. I can't wait every week to hear the next episode. Entirely recommend you give it a listen. So, Baseball TX, thanks for that.
Yes, thank you so very much. That was a great review, and I appreciate you taking the time to put it out there for us. All right, well, as Simon would say, let's draw a line under this one. The Royal Kingsguard doesn't seem like a very well-oiled machine as we're getting a look at it from the inside, does it?
It does not. Not only are, it seems like a lot of separate pieces, but they're not well-oiled at all.
No, they're not. And I agree with Jamie that something is odd about the Kettle Blacks. You know, they just seem to appear out of nowhere, and now one of them is a member of the Royal Kingsguard. Like, what is even happening here with this?
Right.
He even thinks, Cersei, where did you get this guy from? Why would you give him a white cloak?
Yes. He definitely seems to have the fortitude to call out their issues. Like, he had no problem, especially in front of the other Kingsguard, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't even call him in one at a time.
No.
You know?
This was
put
it all out there meeting.
Yeah. And Jaime knows he can't fight. We know Jaime can't fight. How long before the rest of the world knows Jaime can't fight?
Yeah, he really needs to get on practicing with his left hand.
Yes. Yes, he does. Even if he does, I doubt he'll be his old self. But
I think losing his sword hand definitely will make him a different person. That was a life-changing episode for him.
Absolutely. And I don't think he'll ever be as good of a fighter. I mean, Korn Halfhand, he mostly can just fight with his one hand past tense, as he's no longer with us. I'm not sure if Jamie's going to be able to reach that level. Maybe with enough training, maybe he can. He needs to get started, though. I'll say that much.
So we have to wonder, how long will Cersei keep her distance?
Yeah, and why? Why is she keeping this distance?
I think the idea that you threw out earlier is probably most of the reason why. She would not like that idea at all about, putting their relationship out there for everybody to see. She would not want to do that.
Yes, and her reasoning at the time was that Tommen gets his right to the Iron Throne through Robert. So
yes,
he would lose the throne and... You know, probably a lot of bad things would happen to the Lannisters because of this.
That would make the whole Lannister house crumble, I think.
Yes, it would. And I can't even imagine how upset Tywin would be about this.
Yes.
Although, you know, I did mention another idea, too, that maybe she's busy wooing Oberyn Martell. According to Oberyn, she's been putting in effort there. So,
you know, he doesn't seem like a guy who lies about that sort of thing. So,
Agreed. Best to do that without Jaime around.
Yes.
So next week we're visiting Sansa, and she does go home, as Littlefinger promised, but it's not what she expected exactly.
Yes, I wrote that summary as well. So
yes, you did.
I know what that's about, but I guess you'll have to find out next week.
That's right. You'll want to tune in to not only listen to Jenny's summary, but find out where she went. Well, Jenny, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
It has been fun.
I've very much enjoyed myself. So, so there are four ways that you can help us out. You can leave us a review. That would be great, just like Baseball TX did. Thank you very much again for that. You could buy some GOH merchandise at ghostofharrenhal.threadless.com. You can buy us an Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal, or you can become a sustainer at the Lord Paramount or Knight of the Realm level. Or you can just donate to our cause through our website, ghostofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
All right. Are you looking for more ways to interact with these guys? Keep up with the latest GOH news and developments? Check them out on our social media. Follow them on Twitter at ghostharrenhal, Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
All right. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.